and welcome to Awin Talks, the Affiliate Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and I'm joined today by Kevin Edwards, our Global Strategy Director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob. Hey, Dame.
Good, thanks. And co-hosting with us today and making his debut on the podcast is James Skelland, Chief Technology Officer at SingleView, Awin's multi-touch attribution solution. Hi, James. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Kev. That was a very well read introduction about SingleView, very, very sort of corporate line.
How are you doing? I can see you've got a little mark on your face at the moment. What happened?
You're very kind to call it a little mark. yeah, so I was playing field hockey at the weekend. I'm sort of playing at a, I like to think, a reasonably high level. Obviously slightly too high because I was hit in the face with a hockey stick. Lasted 5 minutes of the game and then had to go to A&E to have my lip stitched back together. So 7 stitches and a tetanus jab later. Here I am, ready to mispronounce all sorts of words because my lip doesn't move as it should anymore.
Well, I know we were saying just before you started, actually, that attribution might be a difficult word for you to say, and that's going to be quite the challenge because we're going to talk a bit about that today.
Was it so cold that you could actually? Did you know that you'd done some pretty awful damage, or was it too cold to feel it?
It was too cold to feel. I say I ran the tongue around the teeth, and as soon as I knew the teeth were okay, I could deal with anything else that happened to me.
Well, for those listeners that we've got that are unfamiliar with SingleView, could you give them the elevator pitch and help explain it for them?
Sure. I mean, so SingleView is, as you so expertly said, it is a multi-touch attribution platform. But ultimately what that means is that for every conversion we track the full touchpoint customer journey. So every single piece of marketing interaction and paid and organic they interact with en route to the journey. That's fundamentally our core data set. And then on top of that, what we have is a game theory driven attribution algorithm that determines what percentage credit should go to each of those touch points. So it might say, well, 50% goes to this channel and 20% to this channel, and the remaining gets spread across these.
Perfect. When you explain that to your parents, what's the reaction?
Pretty similar to Kev's reaction when I was just explaining it then.
Well, we'll be asking you a bit more about SingleView shortly, but first, let me give the audience a bit of an idea of what's coming up on today's episode. So, as you'll no doubt be well aware, last Friday was Black Friday, the apex of the peak shopping period. Or was it? We'll shortly be diving into some of the numbers to assess exactly how the annual shopping frenzy went. And we'll be discussing whether we've perhaps reached peak. I sound like a bird, don't I? Has the saturation of deals and discounts finally leveled Black Friday's domination of the Q4 period? We'll be coming to that question a little bit later. And also a bit later, Kev and I will be getting some partner perspectives on Cyber Weekend activity. We'll be chatting with Chris Johnson, COO at one of our prominent tech partners, Intently, as well as Heather Peebles, Head of Affiliate Partnerships at the employee benefits portal Reward Gateway, to hear how their partnerships performed during the all-important weekend. But I say all-important weekend, is that still the case, Kev? You've put together a roundup article based on Awin trends we saw across Black Friday and the wider weekend. What struck you about this year's event, and what were the headline results?
Well, we're recording on Tuesday, so we haven't properly done the number crunching for Cyber Monday yet. But typically what we are seeing is, I suppose, the trends that we've seen in maybe the markets that are more mature with Black Friday are just starting to filter through into some of the other markets. And that's really a continuation of what we've seen over the past couple of years, which is brands going earlier, which means that sales are happening earlier, which means that whilst Black Friday sort of continues to grow and obviously remains the preeminent trading day in the year, some of that impact is sort of drained away earlier in the month. So there's a chart that I've been looking at that plots our sort of weekly performance, week running Monday to Sunday. And if you look at things like year-on-year commission, sales revenue, it literally starts dropping as the weeks go by in November. And actually what we did witness, which I know that there have been some other stats that we've seen from other markets, in particular the US, what we've seen is actually sales have actually marginally dropped. But what is happening is that people, for whatever reason, are actually spending more when they do transact. So we've got the sort of the slightly odd situation of sales dropping, but actually revenue going up. And obviously, because within the affiliate channel, commissions are inherently linked to the sales revenue, it means that actually commissions are also increasing as well. So it depends what metric you look at. If you looked at AOV, you'd think that everything is going like fantastically well. If you looked at sales, you might be a little bit concerned, but obviously it's the marketing mix where the sales are coming from as much as anything. But also, as I say, there are probably some macro factors probably at play here, but from a commission point of view, it's looking pretty positive.
Yeah, presumably one of those factors affecting AOV is travel coming back, not to the extent that we would have seen in 2019, 2018, etc., but better than 2020, when obviously that just was not available and it didn't look like being available on the horizon in the short term.
Yeah, travel's tracking at about twice the rate as last year, which obviously is significant, but it is still at a pre-pandemic level. I think this is sort of, it's a year that almost feels a little bit sandwiched between pre and peak pandemic, if you like, because, you know, last year was so disruptive to so many shopping behaviours that it had really dramatic either positive or negative impacts. And really what we're seeing this year is recovery, but not full recovery. So if you look at things like footfall on the high street, we know that went up in the UK in particular, but it's still sort of 25-30% below the levels of pre-pandemic. So it's very much kind of a mixed picture for a lot of retailers, certainly multi-channel retailers.
Yeah, I know that in the US, Adobe were reporting that online sales on both Thanksgiving and Black Friday as well were marginally down, I think, on 2020's figures. It was from about 9 billion was tracked in 2020. It was about 8.9 billion they were reporting for Black Friday this year. Also in the US, they were talking about the fact that curbside pickup, where consumers are ordering online but actually driving to a store or a local pickup spot that may have been created, and that's been something that's really been embraced by businesses over the last 12 to 18 months out there. About one in every five orders were kind of curbside pickup orders. Partly could be a consequence of its, like I say, its widespread adoption recently. Perhaps even the spectre of the new variant, Omicron, of COVID, steering some of those shoppers away from stores, but still wanting to go and collect those things in a relatively safe environment outside, as it were. Anecdotally speaking, I'm interested for you guys, your behaviours over the weekend or leading up to the weekend. Did you buy anything for Black Friday yourselves? What did you get, James, if anything? A new lip?
I got some Christmas lights for the outside of my house, which was an in-the-morning purchase. And then I sent a link to my mother-in-law for an orbital sander, which will be my Christmas present. They were my token two purchases.
Okay. What about you, Kev?
A few bits and pieces, but I suppose it's sort of, we don't really practice what we preach. I know obviously you're a very sustainable, ethical person, Rob, so you probably just kind of shunned the whole event because you are kind of really anti-consumerism, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, apart from the iPhone that I bought, yeah.
But were these all things that we were going to buy anyway and we're just waiting for the day, I take it?
Exactly, yeah. I was waiting because I knew Apple were doing, when you buy direct, they were offering, I think, a £42 gift card, and I was doing a trade-in thing with them as well. So I managed to knock off the best part of £100 off the iPhone, which is quite useful. So, yeah.
One thing that a few years ago, it's going back quite a few years now, maybe 5-6 years ago, we actually did a proper piece of consumer research to understand who people were buying for, whether they're buying for themselves or whether they were buying presents. And I think because historically peak used to be in the first weekend of December, it was always associated with gifting, and then obviously as it was drawn ever earlier and it becomes a bit detached from Christmas. And what we found at that time, and that, as I say, this is about 6 years ago, is that half of people are actually buying for themselves. And I wonder whether that sort of manifests itself in some of the products that we see as being, you know, the big category. So clothing for us is one of the big categories, and clothing typically you would imagine is something that people probably don't necessarily buy as gifts. So, and health and beauty as well went from our fourth largest to our second largest category on the network. And again, you just wonder whether people are buying stuff for themselves. I would imagine that self-gifting is really kind of very much an established part of Black Friday now.
Self-gifting, the ultimate form of gifting, I find.
My favourite form of guitar.
James, looking into this from a single view perspective, so less, I guess, around like the individual categories that are being bought and how they've performed, how are the kind of marketing channels performing over the event this year? What trends have you been seeing across Awin clients that are using single view?
So at a very top level, so one of the surprising things, well, maybe unsurprising now after this sort of conversation, is that the behavioural trends for Black Friday versus normal trading are not massively different, at least from this high level. So on the day conversions, so these are conversions where the first click happens on Black Friday itself and then they purchase on that day, they're roughly the same when compared to normal trading. So we'd normally see somewhere in the 60s percentages for on the day first click to conversions, and Black Friday is, I think, it's had a 1% less than the normal, so it's the same. We also see single click journeys being slightly lower. So normally around 38% of all conversions are single click, but on Black Friday that drops to 32%. So I think those two combined kind of point to the fact that people aren't impulse buying, that they're following a fairly concerted research pattern, checking out stocks and prices. And what we see broadly is that the moment it's around 3 to 4 days prior to conversion, it's sort of our journey path is about 3 to 4 days long. And Black Friday converting journeys are within those bounds. So it's kind of Monday, Tuesday is when people on average start their Black Friday research from what we've seen. If you then go a little deeper though, that's when you do start to see some slight changes. So email, Google Ads and affiliate show a far greater contribution to converting journeys on Black Friday, sort of purchasing period, shall we say. And one of the biggest losers is SEO. So SEO sees quite a large downturn in its contribution. And I just want to touch on what we also bring in is spend. I mean, I think in the last podcast, Kevin spoke about displacement. And one thing we do track is we ingest spend. And so we can sort of see that while Google Ads fared less well this year against previous years, when you look at spend was actually higher on our clients that we have Google Ads data for on the Sunday and the Monday than on the Black Friday itself. And also on the days prior to Black Friday, spend was up as well. So I don't know whether that's being driven by customer behavioural trends because they're clicking those links, or whether merchants themselves are actually moving their budget around slightly more sort of evenly around the period. It was generic that was the big driver of this. So it wasn't brand or shopping necessarily. It was those generic research-based terms that were driving sort of these odd trends in spend.
That's really interesting. Going back to the SEO point, seeing such a decline as well, do you think that indicates that just the general awareness now of consumers that they are kind of engaging with paid media channels that much more because they know that they can find these deals, they can use kind of these paid advertising marketing opportunities to try to kind of get the discounts maybe that they're looking for on their various searches?
Yeah, I think so. I think email being quite strong in that space kind of shows that, because you're going to be getting emails from merchants you're interested in already. So I think that sort of points to that. And also when you look at broadly, you see a 5% increase in paid media interactions during the Black Friday research period than you do versus normal trading. So people are deal hunting, but they know how to kind of come across those deals, I guess.
I think when you also, what's really interesting is when you look at the data across, like by hour across, and you contrast Black Friday to Cyber Monday, and they're quite different behaviours. I think you have, you know, broadly speaking, you could probably, as you say, you can categorise people as either doing research and knowing and sort of, you know, doing a lot of that in advance versus those that are impulse buying. And clearly Black Friday is designed to try and make people impulse buy. But I think what you have when we start Black Friday, because people assume that a lot of the offers do start at midnight, you obviously have your kind of initial midnight peak. And then if you then contrast what Cyber Monday looks like, you don't necessarily have that midnight peak, but you do have a midnight the other side peak, you know, as Cyber Monday is coming to an end, whereby people potentially have been spent like 4 days doing research or deciding, you know, really convincing themselves of finding it, doing all of their research across different brands. And then we do see quite a peak towards the end of the day and the evening as people decide, yeah, I'm ready to purchase now.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you only need to look at my laptop, my domestic laptop, the tabs that I've got open across all of the various price comparison, cashback, discount sites. I mean, it's horrific to look at and to try and navigate.
I like the way you had to qualify that it was your domestic laptop and not your work
laptop. Domestic laptop, yeah. Yeah. Not my wild laptop, not the one I haven't domesticated yet, but yeah. James, were there any diving a bit deeper into the activity itself? Were there any particular partner types, affiliate types that you saw taking on increased value for marketing activity around this peak period?
Yeah. So as I said, in terms of journey involvement, so that is how often they appear in a converting journey. And then if we look as well with the like our first click contributions, that's how often they appear at the start of the journey. Affiliate as a channel over both fares very, very well. And when you then drill in to see, well, what is it that's driving those? In terms of journey involvement, if you look at 2020, it was actually quite evenly split. So the big three categories of voucher, cashback and content were all equally pulling their weight in that sort of uplifting contribution. Contrast that to this year, though, we actually see voucher take a bit of a hit on it, and it's content, I mean, cashback stays about where it is, but content has really sort of come to the fore this year in terms of driving, sort of being involved in more journeys and driving those decisions. And it's also in that same sort of place when you look at the first click contribution as well. So content sites are not only being involved in more journeys in Black Friday this year than they were previously, but they are initiating a lot more as well. And actually, when you look at those initiators, and if you were to break the affiliate categories out, almost as channels in their own right, there's only email that is better than content affiliates in terms of the uplift in their first click contribution. Content affiliates were actually better than Google Ads, the organic and the paid socials, sort of channels like that.
It's interesting, is it? Because you say about discount maybe sort of taking a bit of a dip. There's obviously been a lot of coverage about how fewer brands are actually discounting as such, which obviously typically can manifest itself in terms of a, you know, across the board discount or a discount code that's available elsewhere, particularly obviously on discount sites. And yet really they may not be discounting directly, but we know that obviously through cashback you can effectively offer a discount, and actually you can enhance that discount. So you could maybe double your cashback rate without offering a discount, and it still feels as though it's a really good deal that you're getting as a consumer, but the brand isn't having to kind of do across the board discount to every customer.
Definitely. No, that's really interesting. Thanks for the insights there, guys. And now for a view on the event from our partners, we'll head to our conversation with Chris and Heather. Hi, guys. Thanks for joining us on the podcast so soon after the big weekend of activity. For those listeners who are unaware of what it is that your companies do, could you give us a brief introduction? Heather, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I'm Heather Peebles. I head up the Global Affiliate Partnerships team at Reward Gateway. So Reward Gateway, if you don't already know, we're leading in the employee engagement sector, essentially bringing all of our wonderful products to HR champions and their employees, basically making the world a better place to work.
That's quite some claim.
Yeah, it is quite a claim. It's almost like ingrained now as our mission statement. So it's I almost sort of go to sleep dreaming about it.
And Chris, what about you?
Hello, everyone. Yeah, Chris Johnson. I'm the COO at Customer Conversion Optimization Specialist Intently. We focus on seamless, personalised on-site engagement tools, and we work with a volume of retailers across many, many markets now.
Right. Well, obviously, we've got you guys on today to talk to us a bit about your experiences of Black Friday, the November peak period so far. So could you tell us what were your headline results, respectively? Heather, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite an interesting year. I think we kind of went into it, if I'm completely honest, with low expectations. I mean, let's just go back to 2020 for a minute. I mean, looking at the period, we were literally in the throes of our second lockdown. I think it was probably about a month-long lockdown. So a completely different scenario where obviously everyone was very much more in that kind of hermit mode. And as such, there were lots of inflated sales when it came to electronics and tech. So I was very dubious as to see how kind of those big tech brands would perform as we went into the Black Friday season for this year. So with that low expectations, it was kind of, you know, confirmed in a sense. We did manage to see some growth, which was great to see. But in all honesty, it wasn't really anything to shout home about in terms of how we compare that year on year. So that was obviously a concern for me, especially across those sectors like electronics and tech that you would normally see like a huge, huge spike. But yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to see other sectors come into the fore, and I'm I'm sure we'll touch on that in a bit. But generally, I would say performance for Black Friday this year was relatively flat.
Yeah, yeah. And how about from your perspective, Chris?
I think we look at Black Friday as an event, you know, not just Black Friday itself, but the week prior and the week after. And I think when you look at that, we saw some growth, which is good. But I think interestingly, there wasn't the same delta between the day, the actual Black Friday itself, and the day before and day after that we saw in previous years. And actually, we saw a much more kind of stronger period over the course of 4 or 5 days surrounding Black Friday than necessarily on Black Friday itself. I'm not sure how that fits with Awin's historical kind of elephant trunk mapping of sales that you do and plot on those graphs, which would be quite interesting to hear. But I think, you know, maybe with people working from home and you know, previous events, it's more consistent throughout the day is what we saw as well. I think the positive for us though is that we, from a business perspective, we launched our largest number of clients in a single month than ever before. So it was almost threefold what a typical month would do for us. So, you know, I think the team have been very, very busy, and you know, there's still a lot of appetite and interest. But yeah, it was certainly a more drawn out Black Friday period for us.
I was just jumping on that. I mean, I completely agree. Definitely saw in terms of the build up to Black Friday a little bit more of a spiked interest there. So when it came to Black Friday itself, it probably didn't pack as much as a punch. But I think what we've got to think about as well with Black Friday is it's, you know, it's been well established for quite some time. And I think we have got a lot more savvy shoppers than previously we probably were working with. And equally, when it comes to stock levels and just being able to get the items that you want, people want to get in there on that Monday morning and be like, right, well, we know those promotions are already happening, so let's make the most of it now, because come Black Friday, will it even be there? So that was something that we noticed.
Yeah, that was something actually that I read a little bit about in eMarketer yesterday. They were talking about some of those same trends, stock availability, supply chain issues, meaning that stock obviously wasn't as available, freely available as it would be historically and in kind of like more normal circumstances. And the degrees to which consumers were willing to not only change the brand that they would buy a product from if it was unavailable, but even the product itself, they were willing to kind of swap that out for something different because they were determined to try and get a deal on Black Friday still.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, to be honest, that's as a result of the whole pandemic as a whole. I feel like that brand loyalty just isn't necessarily there so much. And people are very much attuned to, let's just find the best deal for me. And especially when, you know, the purses are probably, you know, scrunched up tight or however you want to call it. I think really people are looking for where they can make the best saving.
Kev, Chris mentioned the Black Friday elephant that Awin has famously promoted in terms of that trend line that you see across the day, with something of a peak at midnight when people were taking immediate advantage of any live offers that were available to them, and that tailing off and then kind of rising gradually over the rest of the day and having a final kind of hump towards the evening when they were kind of making the most of any promotions that were still available then. What did the elephant look like this year?
Depends whether you're looking at it from a transaction, a commission, or a sales revenue point of view. I mean, we've just sort of had a conversation generally about Awin's numbers, and I think the thing that was really interesting to me, and I think that one of the headlines will be around electronics because I think it's very related to the electronics sector, is that revenue and commissions were up, but sales were actually down. And obviously the only way you can really understand that is really delving into the data. And for us, we're lucky enough to work with a couple of really, really large electronic retailers in the UK in particular. And when we plotted the data looking at the numbers, all three of those metrics by week, so, you know, week starting on Monday, well, 1st of November was a Monday. Actually, what we saw is huge growth in the first half of the month and quite muted growth in the second half of the month. In fact, decline in certain metrics in the second half of the month, especially around Black Friday. And I think there's probably a couple of things going on there. One is the stock availability thing that you mentioned. You know, there were some really quite staggering stats coming out from the US saying that 40% of products were unavailable or were very limited in terms of stock. Clearly, we saw retailers also encouraging people to shop early. Well, they would do, obviously, because they want to get the cash through the door. But there was clearly linked to concerns that there would be a kind of a rush for products that weren't going to be available. So I wonder whether those two things did bring that particular sector quite early on in the month. And as I say, that's very much reflected in what we saw, which meant that what we ended up with was electronics was still really, really big, and it still remains a key sector around Black Friday. But actually, the percentage of sales we tracked as a network dropped from 14 to 10% in that one particular sector. And actually, what we saw from a health and beauty point of view is the percentage of sales we track in that sector went from 14 to 18. So there was a very clear shift. Health and beauty in particular went from the fourth biggest sector that we have to the second biggest sector behind clothing. So again, there's sort of a lot to unpack there, which I think we're still sort of trying to understand why those things may have happened.
Yeah. Looking at individual clients and campaigns then over the course of the last month or so, has there been anything new or novel that you've tried? Have any of those brand partners been looking to you to try something a little bit different this year?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm just sort of touching as well on what Kevin was saying there about health and beauty brands. We have seen, you know, quite a bit of investment, I say, less from health and beauty brands. We've been working closely with like Cult Beauty and other brands like that. But also we've seen quite a spike in luxury fashion brands like the likes of Farfetch and so forth, really kind jumping on those promotions, but also giving us sort of meaty sort of commissionable rates to be able to combine with that. And I think, you know, perhaps, and again, it all is down to circumstance and how our members like to shop, but it might be, you know, still they might have been saving their money, not necessarily traveling as further afield, so they've got a little bit more disposable income to play with, which is why they're probably actually doing a bit more of a splurge when it comes to buying those beauty products or those kind of designs pieces. But you know, everyone's different, but we're just seeing that everyone's being a little bit more strategic, a little bit more mindful about what they're spending money on. And I think, you know, like I said, last year we were in that lockdown phase, and so in terms of like tech, a lot of that has already been bought or purchased, generally purchased previously. So actually, is there more value being put in well-being and experiences and things like that? So that's also been quite interesting to see, you know, some of those experience-led advertisers coming into the fore as well.
We definitely saw a bump in the AOVs for those sectors. Again, I wonder, you know, you mentioned about it's a lot of it's dependent on circumstance. This may be famous last words because the time of recording, there aren't any lockdowns in place, but clearly people are anticipating being able to go out to things like Christmas parties this year in a way that probably they weren't this time last year. So again, you wonder whether that is playing into, because we know that Black Friday in itself is quite an event that people buy stuff for themselves rather than the gifts for other people. So you wonder whether, again, that's a factor that's playing out.
There's probably some other things as well that may have factored into it. Because even the whole month of November, you know, we talked about HGV drivers just now and stock levels and so on. But I think there's been a lot of scarcity tactics this month, like hugely in terms of mainstream media as well. I was reading something around from Which, which is an article about thinking twice before buying gift cards this Christmas, because 1 in 10 receive a voucher for a gift card for a retailer that's gone bust. And it's, you know, it's just you kind of playing into Amazon's hands there, because you go for a safer option with gift cards. And then there was something about a week ago which was urging holiday makers to use the £132 million of unspent refund credit note vouchers before they lose them, their financial protection. And what happens, we had a spike in travel related sales kind of after that news, and then obviously with new variants and so on that's arrived, that kind of put a stall in that as well. So it's been a very unpredictable kind of November, and I think, yeah, piecing together some of the sort of analysis of why certain things have done so well and some things have not done so well, there's large sort of economic factors, I'd say, as well with that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's so unusual to see travel having such a moment within Q4, which is obviously traditionally gifting period season. So it's been really good to see your brands like Booking.com and TUI really coming to the fore. And we're seeing like substantial year on growth. And I mean, it's probably, you probably think, oh, it's no surprise, obviously, when you think where we were a year ago. But at the same time, like, these are brands that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see featured in somewhat odd sort of top 10 sort of cashback generators. So that's going to make for an interesting Q1, but let's call that one a TBC.
Yeah, I guess there's an element to which, when you look at the consumer trends in the travel industry, traditionally Q1, January, pretty much almost actually as soon as Christmas is over, people start looking towards the next thing to enjoy, which might be a holiday, a getaway in the spring. That's when we start to see that traffic start to peak around travel promotions and offers. That's when a lot of the travel brands start to really get their adverts out, trying to kind of raise awareness of their products and the destination packages that they offer. So with them potentially maybe that kind of demand being kind of drawn earlier into November and around Black Friday, is it going to reduce potentially that demand in January that we've traditionally seen? What are your expectations?
All variant dependent, right?
I was going to say, yeah, that is the biggest kind of factor to still consider.
But then equally, you know, if you're shopping this time of year and you're looking at luxury holidays, again, the different purchase behaviours and so on that happen is you might stall on your luxury holiday, but then a slightly more expensive TV may become a bit more of a wish list item for you. And so you may spend a little bit more. Maybe that's something we're seeing with the increased AOVs as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So how are you guys approaching 2022 then in terms of your planning for the new year? What are your expectations for the 12 months that are about to start?
I can start with that then. I think we spent a lot of time, you know, setting ourselves up during the last couple of years. You know, we're set up to scale. We've got some ambitious plans. I think for us next year, it really is, again, all dependent on being able to travel, which hopefully, you know, we will be able to do so, is getting out and meeting, working with our partners in new and existing markets, just to really sort of get back to some sort of face-to-face. You know, we've had quite a busy amount of time in the office itself with a lot of our team, and, you know, the face-to-face environment really does make a huge difference, especially with things like training, onboarding, with even seeing clients again for the first time in a while, and it really has made a tangible difference to us. So, you know, I think we're approaching it with a sense of optimism, and I think some of the new solutions that we've launched around our machine learning products and so on, which is now kind of taking precedent for us, is getting really into the data points and behaviours and on-site purchase behaviours and so on, is a really really nice thing for us to bring to the table, partners.
And what about from your perspective, Heather?
Yeah, well, data is a big thing for us as well. And I think just in general, like being able to actually be able to report on some of those really kind of interesting stats and be able to share those with retailers is definitely at the core for us to be able to like create much stronger partnerships. So that's certainly something that we're going to go into a little bit more detail. But for us, in terms of 2022 and how that looks, I think really kind of rebuilding. I feel like I've always been saying this. We need to rebuild the travel sector presence on our platform. I feel like that's just been a constant like thing at the back of my mind for the last 18 months as a whole anyway. But obviously, you know, government guidelines pending and variant and all that, we really kind of want to see travel sort of back in place in Q1. I mean, we saw a huge gap obviously from that last year, so we really want to kind of reintroduce that and work together with those brands to be able to like bring them back to the fore. So we're going to have some special things going on there, and we're also going to be doing more around kind of things like push notifications. Like we see generally quite a large uptake when it comes to our smart spending app, and which is only increasing because more people obviously are, you know, permanently attached to their phones and actually making those savings through their phones. So we really want to be able to draw more people through to the app, so we're going to be doing more stuff with push notifications and seasonal emails as well. So we'll probably do some like travel themed newsletters that will go out in the new year. So that's all exciting stuff that we're going to be working on.
Heather, I was just going to, you mentioned your app traffic and activity there. Are you, from a mobile perspective, I know that there are other businesses that put alerts up saying the sale won't track if you click through and actually transact on the brand's actual app itself. What's your sort of approach going to be from an in-app tracking point of view?
Yeah, our current approach really is that if that retailer doesn't track in-app sales, we won't make it available for those members to make those savings. I think, you know, obviously we don't want to be misleading any of our members, but really we need to be honing in on that transparency piece, and we're going to be working closely with affiliate networks, SaaS providers and retailers themselves to be able to make sure that we are in making those, you know, justifiable improvements to the affiliate program and making sure that we're giving access to those savings for our members. So really kind of working together with them, and I can say this as sort of co-founder of the publisher board, collectively with other publishers like Roared Gateway, we're going to be working closely on being able to provide information to those advertisers, basically like case studies, stats, showing them the value of actually why having in-app tracking enabled is really valuable to them as an affiliate, and how that can really increase sales and engagement across the whole.
Is that the main goal for the publisher board then over the coming months, or are there wider plans that you guys have got in terms of trying to improve those industry standards and get that engagement with the initiative?
Yeah, we've got quite a few, and I think as is always the challenge when we look at the various different criteria, and generally we look at validations, payments, commissionable rates, deduplication rules, all of these different aspects, which are obviously key to understanding and making improvements to the channel as a whole. But it's very easy to get drowned within that. And so we've really kind of made sure that we've got a focus or like some key priorities. In-app tracking is definitely the forefront of that. And it's something that we're really kind of making efforts to really hone in on. And we've been doing like network presents sessions and getting to grips with how we can actually improve that and work more closely. But in-app tracking isn't just the only one. You know, we're very aware, obviously, with increasing privacy parameters, that the challenges, especially around third-party cookies and that sort of thing. So the last click. So that's stuff we're working on. And then also, it's something which has been in the back, and I know Kevin might have jumped in there, so I'll let you jump in if there was something you were about to say necessarily. Oh, you're all good. You're good. One thing as well, which is something which we're very conscious of with the board, is the FCA price walking legislation, which is going to impact some of our bigger insurers across the channel. So it's something that the publisher board is very active in discussing with the IAB and the FCA themselves as to how insurers are impacted and what that means for publishers as well as advertisers, because essentially the price walking legislation will come into play in January, and we don't really know in terms of how that's going to impact us. So we're actually working quite closely there to see what sort of alternative solutions there might be into play. And indeed, if affiliate really is kind of a channel that really needs to be impacted as such, and that what that means going forward.
Heather, could you give a quick kind of top line? I'll put you on the spot here, but
that's
for
right.
Audience members outside of the UK who might not be familiar with this particular legislation that's kicking in as far as the finance sector is concerned, what essentially it entails?
Yeah, so really what it entails, and this is something that the FCA has been working on for a little while now, essentially what it means is more about making it just for members when they're transacting and taking out insurance policies. And really what it's cracking down on is the long-term value of some of the contracts that they're essentially opting into. Because essentially with insurance, you're really making those savings on that sign up. But really the FCA are then challenging this to basically say, well, where is the long-term value for these members? Like, we need to be more transparent about the savings that they make once they've got into that initial first year of their contract. So it's basically pushing it back onto the advertisers, in a sense, to really think about what savings are they offering to those members post that first year into their contract. So whether for insurers that means them readjusting or making changes to their affiliate program or the coming out of the channel altogether is really up for debate. But from what we're currently seeing, you know, we're seeing some brands who have reacted to that and are continuing to react to that. But they're not, from a publisher point of view, we need to address, like, that's going to leave potentially a gaping hole when it comes to that sector. So how do we bridge that gap? How do we support those insurers and make sure that they aren't leaving the channel? So it's something which we're very concerned about. But ultimately, we do everything we can to work with that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting example, I think, of local regulators intervening into an industry which they perhaps don't necessarily understand the implications for publishers and the businesses that work with these brands. And so this is obviously a dialogue that's been going on for a little while, and it remains to be seen exactly what the effects of this will be. But it's worrying times, I guess, for any partners that invested quite heavily into that particular sector.
Definitely. And I think the concern as well is the fact that actually will this be creating more of a disservice to our end users? Because essentially, if we're taking those savings away from them, we're actually making it harder for them, and actually they will be looking elsewhere for deals, and they probably won't be getting the best one for themselves. So really, are we doing more harm than good? Are we channeling it all? We're not monopolizing on it, but are we channeling it down to one sector? I mean, where do comparison sites, for example, sit in this? And are we actually doing more harm than good for those individual insurers? I think that all remains to be seen, but I think, you know, as the months unfold, we'll see what that does.
Chris, over at Intently, your lack of activity in the finance sector currently presumably insulates you from this particular circumstance.
I think there's the many verticals that we work in. That's definitely a lower end one for us at the moment. So I'm pretty much a passenger in this conversation for now.
It's not a bad thing, eh?
Yeah, if you sort it all out and let me know, that'd be fantastic, I think.
Well, we'll probably look to explore this a little bit further on another episode in the near future, and we may well look to get you back involved in that, Heather. But In the meantime, thanks both of you for taking the time to come onto the podcast today and to tell us about all the recent activity and future plans that you've got for your respective businesses. And best of luck for the rest of the year.
Lovely. Thanks very much. Thank you. Thanks very much. Best of luck to you too.
So that's the Black Friday view from a couple of our partners here at Awin. If you'd like to dive into some of the Awin data yourself, we still have our peak performance tracker up on the Awin blog, which allows you to look at individual markets and sectors and see how they've performed in terms of revenue, sales and commission over the course of November. I'll include a link to that page with the report in the landing page copy for this episode, so do check that out. Looking forward though, the year is nearly up, which is incredible to say. It's another one that has really flown by, and over the coming weeks we'll be releasing various articles that take a look back at 2021 and some of the milestones that Awin and the wider industry actually reached. We'll also be publishing our annual predictions piece for 2022 very soon. That will be a two-parter featuring our 10 big trends to look out for in the coming 12 months for the industry. And if you're a listener with an interest in the telecom sector, then I can recommend checking out Alex Palmer Yee's 5 predictions for the telco sector in 2022, which is on the blog right now. Kev, what else is coming up that or has been published that you wanted to highlight?
There's just one quick thing for me, which is we've just published a new case study, which is available on awin.com. It's specifically case studies Wild Deodorants, who are a natural deodorant, a UK brand. It was one of our sort of initial Awin Access clients when we brought Awin Access to the market last year. And actually, what's been really nice in that time is that they've got £2 million worth of investment from the founders of Innocent Smoothie. And they've really grown their program with us. So as Awin Access has grown on our network, and I think that, again, another Black Friday stat, but I think our sales for Awin Access clients were up about 50% year on year on Black Friday. And as they've grown with our product, and you know, we've, you know, the hundreds of advertisers that launched programs this year, their program's all also grown with us as well. So it goes into some of the detail about how they've driven 11% of their online sales now through affiliate marketing. So I'd certainly recommend having a look at that.
Are you a Wild deodorant user yourself, Kev, at all?
No. I was trying to think of something diplomatic to say. I know that they now have got distribution in Sainsbury's though, so becoming quite mainstream. So
widely available, yeah. Are you a spray deodorant user or do you use a stick?
This has gone quite Alan Partridge.
Come on, answer the question.
Spray, Rob.
Spray. What about you, James?
I'm still going through all the Lynx Africa box sets I got when I was 14.
Now, from a single view perspective, James, what are your big plans for 2022?
So, yeah, 2022 for us should hopefully be an exciting one. Obviously, 2021 was about getting sort of bedded in with the Awin family. And then 2022 from a business side, it is all about scale up. So we're going to get integrated with the likes of Share a Sale and Commission Factory and then roll ourselves out across US, DAC, APAC, those regions early next year, as well as continuing to sign up as many UK advertisers as we can. In terms of what to expect from the platform itself, there's obviously plenty of enhancements coming to the product over the next 12 months, but the one that I'm pretty excited about is we internally always joked and viewed sort of a single view as the world's best rearview mirror. The data is absolutely great, but it only tells you what happened. So we're working on using our MTA data set to roll out some sort of predictive modeling capabilities so that the MTA data will actually tell you where you should spend your next pound, euro, dollar, yen, etc. So pretty excited about that one.
Yeah. And do you think there's going to be, more broadly, thinking about multi-touch attribution? Obviously, I think it was back in September that Google introduced it as their default for their ads product, didn't they? And I just wonder whether you see that as a form of validation for your own solution and whether you think there's going to be renewed interest in more and more brands and businesses adopting this type of methodology.
I mean, I certainly hope so, otherwise I'm in the wrong business.
That's kind of a leading question, really, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it's important to be a leader in your space. And there was pre-Google, there was a small group of us attribution providers doing some interesting things, but it was always quite a niche thing. And as much as we may not want to admit it, Google tends to drive a lot of these conversations, as you said. So like you say, with where GAV4 Google Ads is bringing in those capabilities to how they measure as well. That is going to be the catalyst, I think, for the attribution conversation to really kick forward. You know, when we used to go and pitch SingleView a few years ago to prospective clients, the first few slides of our deck was always kind of selling in the concept of attribution, which you know, why is it better than last click, for example? And I see the shift coming where we then no longer need to do that. You know, consumers will know about it. They'll know they need it already. And it's just part of that ecosystem. There's an analogy of, you know, the electric light bulb. You know, when the first few light bulbs came into buildings, people would go in and be like, oh, what's that? You know, do I need that? That's interesting. Now, you know, it's so ubiquitous. It's in every house. You don't even think about it. You just turn your light on and work. And I see over certainly the next 12 to 24 months, attribution becoming part of just your day ecosystem, and you don't need to consciously think about it. So even though, you know, Google are kind of maybe driving that, it actually becomes slightly easier for the likes of us, I think, because we then no longer have to sell the concept of attribution. We just need to sell why we're better. You know, we almost need to say, we know you need light bulbs now, but here's why you should buy ours.
James Skelland, light bulb salesman. Well, thanks for coming onto the pod today, James, and we'll definitely get you back on again in next year to see how that progress is going and how many light bulb moments you've had.
It's been a pleasure. Hopefully sooner, but you know, as Kevin said, hopefully I get more than a couple of days' notice to crunch the Black Friday data.
Yeah, definitely. Kev, before we go, I know there was one number that you wanted to share based on the Black Friday activity that you didn't mention in the intro that was a bit of a milestone.
I feel like I'm stealing Craig's thunder here because he had his short-lived number of the month segment, but
he's gone now.
This is a better number than anything that he's did. So yeah, I was informed by our CTO on Black Friday, in fact, that we had tracked our 1 billionth sale on the Awin platform. It doesn't include kind of share a sale and commission factory, etc., but tracked purely on the Awin platform, 1 billionth sale. I think it was a couple of days before Black Friday. It would have been quite neat for it to have been on Black Friday, but it was a cashback sale, possibly a little bit predictably, and it was for Boots in the UK. So £77, £1.55 cashback.
Yeah, do you know what? When you told me that, I actually went onto the Boots site to see if there was any product on sale for £77 to see if I could identify what it was that they bought, but I think it was a combination. So yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get any basket information, unfortunately.
No. Okay, well, thanks, guys, for that roundup and review of the Black Friday insights. Kev's article will be on the blog by the time this episode goes live, so please do check that out. And remember, if you like what you hear on the podcast, then we'd love for you to give us a review and a rating on your podcast streaming platform of choice. It really helps boost our profile and grow our audience. In the meantime, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another episode of Awin Talks. I hope you'll join us then. For now, though, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye from Kev.
Bye.
And goodbye from James.
Goodbye.